Let's talk to John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services, a registered investment advisory firm and registered principal at Royal Alliance Associates. Where do you want to start, John? What's your 30,000-foot take on the banking situation?
Well, let's start with it's Friday, and it's triple witching Friday and leprechaun. So with all that, I think we're in for volatility. No idea where this thing is going to end. But with the banks, SVP has certainly been in the news. That's the Silicon Valley Bank. And I think from the high level, it's going to have minimal impact on inflation. We might see a slightly slowing economy from this. The Fed's response and the Treasury's response may ultimately lead to a little bit more inflation by providing a little bit more liquidity. But we have a phrase in the market that says the Fed hikes till something breaks. And that's what happened last Friday. They broke something. And they really had painted themselves into a corner. They waited way, 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 way too long to raise rates. They started to, and then they stopped. They started, they stopped. And what they ended up doing was painting themselves into a corner, and now they've had to walk over that wet paint, and they're going to have to fix it. But that's okay, because it's, you know, they're going to fix it. They're going to do what they have to do. Nobody's going to get this exactly right. But the bottom line is I think this is doing a little bit of the Fed's work for them. We may see a little bit more reduction in inflation as a result of this situation in the short term. And one indicator that we watch actually puts a calculation of core inflation right at about 3%. So that's where we may be by the end of the year. That's good, but I don't think we'll get there without having some kind of a recession. So this whole no landing theory, I just don't see that in history. I think it's a Fed fantasy. And with that, inflation tends to bottom within a year after a recession. So we just got to get through this year. It's going to continue to be rough, maybe volatile. We may end up the year right where we are right now with the stock market. So that brings in the question, well, what do you do if you don't make any money for a year?
What do you do?
It's not a bad idea to have some money in cash, and bonds are back. I said that last time. And we really need to see where the dust is going to settle on this. So there are some opportunities in the market. We can talk about that in a little bit. But it's okay to have some money on the sidelines. This is not the time to act out of fear. This is time to actually be looking for opportunities. And the opportunities are starting to present themselves, but I think we'll have some better opportunities in the next month.
All right, we'll talk about that after a quick break. But, you know, it just I just wanted to clarify this point. I think all of the banks and institutions are swimming in the same pool. So while you can say that the fault lies in part with the Fed's failure to act appropriately on interest rates, it was mismanagement at the bank that doomed SVB, right?
It was, and not a completely isolated event, but mostly isolated with the way that they managed. Most banks did not manage themselves the way that SVB did.
John Beaver, financial advisor, Phase 3 Advisory Services, is on, and he was saying a moment ago, this is not a time to panic. Maybe be in some cash and maybe see the opportunity that the current situation presents, which is what, John? What are you thinking about there?
In the stock market. The market is repricing itself for higher interest rates. That happens every time that rates rise. Investors demand more return on their stocks if they can get more return on their bonds. And the only control that investors have, you know, they can't make companies make more money. All they can do is buy at a cheaper price. And so that's what we're going through, is that repricing with higher interest rates. And now we're repricing because it looks like companies' earnings may also be somewhat impaired this year because of the banking situation. We know that the banks are going to make less money because now they have to pay a little bit more money into this new facility that's been created to help bail out any depositors over $250,000. What that exactly looks like, we don't know yet. Yeah. But the opportunity is clearly in the stock market, and this would be for longer-term investors. Again, short-term investors should not be putting their money in the market unless someone is a short-term trader and they know what they're doing. So this is the situation that creates those opportunities. The volatility is good. And no one's going to pick the bottom exactly. If you find the bottom, great for you, wonderful. But no one knows where that bottom is. So it's best to take your money and put it in over several months. And one of those purchases will find the bottom.
I've asked everybody this in the last few days on the business lunch, like you anyway. What do you make of bailing out the deposits over $250,000?
That's a tough one. You know, it really is, because how far do we take this? And, you know, Janet Yellen, she was not clear yesterday. The deputy secretary wasn't clear today. Is this going to go across the board or not? So they're being a little bit elusive on this. We don't know how far this goes. I think that's them saying, well, we're going to do what we have to do. But let's think back on this with SVB. It was a failure by bank management to manage the risk of rising interest rates. One of the things that bankers have to do is manage that risk of rising rates, because if they've got a portfolio of treasury bonds that they bought when the bonds were paying 1% and now interest rates are 4%, they're going to lose some money there temporarily. So that's something that bankers do. It was a failure by the regulators to do their job. And again, I think the Fed is partly culpable here in how quickly they raised rates. They raised rates the fastest in history, fastest ever. So it really was a very difficult situation, but most banks have managed their way through this. So, again, I think it's isolated to just SVB and those executives at SVB and a few of the other banks. They'll probably have their pay slashed, maybe even fired. That's good. This is what capitalism is about. You know, I think SVB probably had novice bankers who are great at raising money, but not necessarily managing it. And so if you are a larger depositor, you're a business. You know, if you're under $250,000, no problem. You are covered. But if you're larger, you need to ask yourself, what kind of bank do you want to do business with? You know, do you want one that's really great at raising money, or do you want one that's really good at managing it? And this gets back to that question of, should the government bail out these larger, you know, these larger depositors? And if they do that, then they're creating what's called moral hazard. It basically encourages the banks to take more risk because, yeah, hey, the depositors will get bailed out. So if they do that, they have to bring in more regulations. And that's the question. Should these regional banks have to abide by the same regulations as the large banks that are technically too big to fail? What the government is basically doing here is they're saying, well, now we're going to take too big to fail down to the regional size banks.
Paul Krugman in the New York Times today was talking a little bit about this. Will this actually make banks more aggressive or engage in riskier business because they know they're going to get bailed out anyway, at least their deposits will? Or will they sort of constrain themselves? And his read on it right now is that they're going to constrain themselves, that they will be more cautious about where their assets are and more protective of the deposits. Do you think that's probable?
I think it's true in the short term because of the crisis, but when we get past the short term, it's going to lead to more risk. It always does. And we've been in this cycle of creating what, you know, this is called moral hazard in the industry. We've been in this process of creating moral hazard at least back to 1998, when there was a bailout of a fund called Long-Term Capital Management that was going to result in an $80 billion loss in the banking system. And since then, we seem to have gotten into this situation where the Fed and the government feel it's their responsibility to bail out bad decisions. Bad decisions in capitalism are taken care of by the market. So it's how far do we actually want to push this? And you do create moral hazard the more guarantees you bring into place. And if you have those guarantees, then you have to have more government oversight. So that's back to the question, how much government oversight do we really want in a capitalistic system?
Well, I want enough. I want maybe more than we've got. I mean, we are in an era right now of deregulation of the banks. And I wonder if the pendulum swung too far.
It could be. It could be. And, you know, we will get this resolved, and we'll pay the price one way or the other. We'll either pay the price in some failures, or we'll pay the price in higher regulation and lower returns on deposits. But, you know, it will work itself out.
Do you agree with that? Right. That when the Treasury says that, don't worry, the taxpayers won't bear the burden of this, ultimately taxpayers will. This is another Krugman point today. I'm sure you would concur that, in fact, if banks have to pay higher insurance for failures down the road, they're going to pass those costs along to all of us. We'll get less yield or higher costs to bank, right? Ultimately, it comes down to all of us, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. Exactly. And we're all in the same system. So this is where it comes back to, you know, really, I don't think we need to worry about the banking system. It's going to be what it's going to be. They'll get it figured out. It's what does this mean to me as an investor, which is really, we as financial advisors, our job is to take all of this crazy information out there and try and distill it down to, well, what does this mean for my plan? Well, it means that we're probably going to be seeing places that where we can get a higher return than on a bank deposit, you know, and that might be treasury bonds. It might be that we're going to have to be willing to lock up more money in CDs than to have it in the short-term savings account or money market account. But ultimately, these situations, as I said at the beginning, they create opportunities for those investors that are willing to look beyond the current crisis and look down the road where we're going.
I like your note to my producer, Pete. Point 15 of a multi-page document to us today said, 2 years from now, this will all just be a bad dream. And I like the sound of that, too. John Beaver from Phase 3 Advisory Services. Okay, John, thanks for your thoughts today. We always appreciate it.
You're welcome. Happy St. Patrick's Day.
Yeah, you too. A Guinness tap room, the second of which in the United States will be opened up outside of Ireland itself. Only two, and one will be in Chicago. Ryan Wagner is the National Guinness Brand Ambassador and Head of Marketing and Community Partnerships for the Open Gate Brewery. Let's talk about this. Ryan, welcome to WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm doing well, sir. Thanks so much for having me on.
I think I got that right. Tell me what it is and how exclusive or new it will be to Chicago.
Yeah, this brewery is exciting. You know, Guinness has found a home in Chicago for a long time now. The first barrels of our beer rolled into town back in 1910. So a lot of folks here locally are very familiar with Guinness, what we're about, the type of beers that we make. But the Open Gate Brewery really focuses on innovation, creativity. So there's a lot of great breweries in this city. That type of creativity has been central to the beer scene here in town for a long time. So we just hope to build on that, to be a part of that community. So you'll see all kinds of different styles. We're going to be working on a pretty exciting food menu as well that brings in some of the global inspiration that Guinness has behind it. So a lot to look forward to.
Will it be the Guinness that I've come to know as well? Will you be brewing that here or not?
We will not be. So Guinness Draft Stout, the beer that everybody knows and loves, I think that's the iconic pint that most people think about when they hear the word Guinness. That beer is brewed in Dublin and always will be. So we'll be importing it the same way that your favorite bars and pubs do across Chicago. What we'll focus on is everything else. The Open Gate Brewery really exists to take all of those preconceived notions that people have about Guinness and kind of flip them on their head a little bit. We'll serve an amazing pint of Guinness Draft Stout. There's no doubt about it. But what's interesting to me is what we're going to do with the other 11 tap lines that we'll have inside that brewery.
So what are you going to do, an IPA, a blonde? Talk about the kind of beers you're going to pour.
Yeah, I think the sky's the limit. You know, we're living in a time right now in the States where the beer scene is as diverse as it's ever been. And the people that are drinking those beers are as educated on beer as they've ever been at any point in history. So really, it's incumbent on us. We have a responsibility to deliver the kind of quality and the kind of styles that people have come to expect. So you mentioned a few, right? IPAs, pale ales, amber ales. We're certainly going to mess around in the barrel age space. You'll see some things that are fruited sours, spontaneously fermented things. Really anything that you can think about when it comes to the beer industry, we're going to try to bring to life down there.
The bar has to be pretty high for you guys, no pun intended. But I mean, you're Guinness. And if you're not going to brew what we know Guinness for here, you'd better bring it. You'd better have your game. Do you agree with that? Is there a little pressure on you all, Ryan?
Oh, I think the pressure comes in two different directions, right? You mentioned Guinness. We've been around for more than 260 years. And for that entire time, Guinness has been synonymous with quality. When you get a Guinness beer in front of you, you know it's going to be absolutely at the top level when it comes to quality. But also, we've got a lot to live up to in terms of quality and in terms of beer just being in Chicago. As I mentioned, a ton of breweries have been here a long time. They've been setting that bar very high. So we love those expectations. We love that people are going to walk into that taproom expecting the very best, and we're going to push to go even higher than that.
So it's the Open Gate Brewery. That's the name of the brewery that Guinness is going to open in Chicago. When and where is this going to be?
We're looking at later this summer. We haven't nailed down a specific date yet. We're going to make sure everything is absolutely perfect before we throw open those doors. We're going to be in the West Loop, 901 West Kinsey. Lots going on down in that part of town, as everybody knows. So we're excited to be a part of that revolution that's happening down there. And, you know, the Open Gate name comes from more than, you know, 100 years ago. There was a product research unit opened at St. James's Gate in Dublin where we first started really digging into innovation. They opened the doors to that brewery in Dublin on the same property where we brewed Guinness Draft Stout a few years ago, called it the Open Gate Brewery. That's the same name we share with our sister brewery in Baltimore. So the Open Gate Brewery name has become synonymous with that more creative side of Guinness. We're excited to carry that torch.
You have an idea for how big the room is going to be over there? You know, there's some big restaurants. It's very crowded. How much space are you going to take up?
We're stoked, man. We have a more than 100-year-old railroad depot that we're converting. So we love taking things that are old and breathing new life into them. It's 15,000 square feet total. So within that building, you're going to have a 10-barrel brew house. That's where those creative beers will begin their lives. We'll also have a retail shop. The first Guinness bakery in existence will be inside that space. A large tap room, of course. That's kind of the beating heart of what that space will be. And then also a private event space. We want to make sure that Chicagoans can gather, you know, across the spectrum of who those people are, what organizations they represent. We really want it to be a central part of the community here.
Are you going to partner with one of those restaurants over there?
You know, the partnerships, man, it's really going to run the gamut. You know, we've already started talks with Intelligentsia. We're excited to work with them on a coffee program. I mentioned the bakery. That's going to be a big part of that. And, you know, if you look at the work we've done both in Dublin and in Baltimore, community partnerships are central to what we do. So in terms of restaurants and bars, you know, we're excited to work with those folks. They're really the reason why we're able to do things like this. Our beer exists in so many different places around Chicago. So it's
right.
A big tip of the place.
But you'll have a food menu, right? Will you'll be serving food as well?
Correct. Yeah. So the bakery will have its own menu, but then a full menu, breakfast, brunch, lunch, dinner, kind of throughout the week. So we're gonna push the envelope there.
I want to work there.
Look, we're gonna have 75 new jobs created as part of this project. I think that's a big part of what we're doing. So I don't know. You want to be a bartender? You want to help us out on the tour side? What do you want to do?
I want to be a guy that just hangs out and talks to people and kind of walks up to the bar and says, "Hey, what do you think of that lager?" I want to be that guy. I think that's your job, isn't it, Ryan?
I was going to say, you're talking a little bit my job here. We might have to fight it out. No, look, the great thing about this, man, we exist to build bonds between people. You know, beer is almost secondary to bringing people together. You know, we're excited that beer is the reason why people will show up. But at the end of the day, we want people to join in that space, to come together in that space and really celebrate what is unique about Chicago, what's unique about these neighborhoods. That's what we do there.
Well, I've got your website in front of me. I'll mention it now as we close. But is that the place to go? Seriously, you're going to hire 75 people. Do we click on there if we want to inquire within?
Yeah, at the moment, GuinnessBreweryChicago.co. That's where you go for all the information. You can sign up for a newsletter. As we move through the next couple months, as we complete the construction and really dig into to getting into the operational stage, that's where we'll start sending updates. And employment's going to be a part of that newsletter as we move forward.
That's Ryan Wagner. He's the National Guinness Brand Ambassador, Head of Marketing and Community Partnerships for the Open Gate Brewery, coming to the West Loop. They'll be hiring 74 people. One position has already been filled. I'll be the guy walking around going, "Hey, about that lager." GuinnessBreweryChicago.co, not com, but co. And welcome to Chicago. Congratulations in advance. I think you're in a good spot. I think you'll have a nice time over there.
I appreciate it. I want to wish everybody a happy St. Patrick's Day. There's a lot to celebrate this year. Drink responsibly, as always, but we can't wait to celebrate in that space next year on St. Patrick's Day.
Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news now with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. You'll be able to have a bite to eat again after checking out Monet and Van Gogh at the Art Institute of Chicago. Dining options are reopening. Boca Restaurant Group and Levy will oversee food and beverages. Cranes reports they'll debut new menus at three dining areas at the Art Institute, including the Market, the Modern Cafe, and the Member Bar. The service will begin March 23rd after being closed for 3 years because of the COVID pandemic. The Art Institute spruced up its dining areas during the downtime. More unrest among franchisees of McDonald's, and it could stand in the way of the company's expansion plans. Bloomberg reports franchisees have been invited to a meeting this month with the company's board. They'll press their case in person about higher costs and new operating rules. Franchisees are concerned about rising wages and ingredient and packaging costs. Inflation has also trimmed franchisee profitability. McDonald's plans to open 1,900 new locations this year worldwide. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
With the business of food, here's Steve Alexander.
Happy Friday, and we're sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Take it away, Freddie.
We are the champions.
I wonder how many times that song has been played at high schools across the state after champions in wrestling and basketball and bowling and other winter sports were crowned. And maybe it'll be played again tomorrow as the best restaurant teams in the state are going to be named.
So this is a statewide high school competition where students compete in culinary and management skills.
That's one of the biggest cheerleaders for the Illinois restaurant industry.
Sam Toya, president and CEO of the Illinois Restaurant Association.
And before we get to tomorrow's competition, Sam, let's talk about how the restaurant industry is doing right now in Illinois.
We're not completely out of the woods, but things are getting better every day. But it's still really hard for restaurants, even in good times. Restaurants work on a very tight margin.
Yeah, tough business. Okay, tomorrow morning at Kendall College on Michigan Avenue, the Pro Start competition, teams from seven high schools will compete in two areas, culinary and restaurant management, front end and back end.
That's right. It is just as intense as any food cooking competition that you see on TV, like the Food Network.
And for the kitchen crews, they go in blind. Here's a protein. Do something with it.
And then the judges will decide who has the best dish. And then on the management side, they present their business plans like you would present a business plan to a bank.
There are prizes.
The first place team will advance to the National Pro Star Competition in Washington, D.C., where they will compete for full scholarships from the best culinary and management programs in the country.
More than 50 students are going to be competing, and there will be spectators cheering on their teams.
Oh, yeah, we hope the public will come out and cheer on the future of the culinary industry and experience a live cooking competition unlike any other.
Tomorrow at 9:30, Kendall College at National Lewis University, which is at 18 South Michigan Avenue. And there's a lot of food industry support going into this. Sysco and many other companies are involved in supporting the ProStart competition. From the farm to your belly? Well, I wonder why today has been declared National Irish Food Day. Some Cole Cannon for me, please. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Right now, let's talk with Jennifer Prell, the president of ElderWorks. They've got a seminar coming up to protect people from scams. Thanks for joining us, Jennifer. How are you today?
I'm well. Thanks for having me.
And this is targeted at seniors. I guess all of us would benefit from it. First, tell us who ElderWorks is. What do you all do?
ElderWorks prides ourselves on providing education for community members, advocacy, and senior living coordination. We're a not-for-profit helping any older adult or senior with their aging questions and needs.
Give me an example of something you typically handle.
Getting a call from an adult child saying mom or dad are declining and what should I do next? And then we provide information on housing, on care at home, elder law attorneys, what their next steps could be, maybe even going to the doctor. It's a long, drawn-out process. It's about 30 minutes of an intake, if you will.
Intake. But you're not a facility per se. You're just more an advisory arm, right?
We're information referrals and guidance, and we're a complimentary service. So anyone can call us with any question, and we'll help them.
So I would imagine I just know so many people that are in this boat. Your phone must ring all day.
We're quite busy, which we love. If the phone doesn't ring, we kind of get crazier because we're wondering, everyone already knows everything. They don't have questions.
We're hopeful
that the phone keeps ringing.
What's the biggest mistake that families make as they approach this point in their parents' or grandparents' lives?
The biggest mistake you can ever make is to tell someone what they have to do. You are not your parent's parent. You can make suggestions. You can help guide them. Unless they don't have full cognition, you don't have the right to teach them or treat them like a child. You know, everybody deserves respect and dignity.
You guys are doing a seminar on scams that people are falling prey to. Talk about that.
Yes, we have a scam seminar coming up on March 23rd at 10 a.m., and it's going to cover the current scams that are happening. Honestly, there are 50 to 100 scams that I'm aware of, so this is just going to touch on the most current scams, how to recognize them, how to avoid being a victim, and then what you should do if you think you've been scammed. So it's a pretty intense seminar, and we're very excited to be having this
So you're inviting people to watch it via Zoom, right? It's a webinar, Scams,
yes.
Be Alert and Be Aware, 10 a.m. next Thursday. So how do I get invited? I'll need a link, right?
Yeah, you can go to events at elderworks.org. That's events at ELDERWERKS.org. Or you can call the office at 847 847- 462-0885, and you'll get a free registration. We don't charge any community members for education, so just join us and learn a little bit.
The one I've heard about a lot is where somebody pretends to be the grandson or daughter, and then they say, Grandpa, I need you to send money to my account because I'm in jail or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm overseas and I can't get back. Yes, that's one of the most prevalent scams. What I suggest people do is use a different name. So if your grandson's name is John, say, okay, Bob. And they say, yeah, if this is your grandson, Bob, then you know it's a scam. Or tell them you'll call him right back. Don't ever, ever just jump and send money. You must verify everything. Our whole lives, we verify everything. But when it comes to our family members who are in need, we don't even question things, which we should.
Romance scams are also a scheme out there, right?
Oh, the romance scams. Yes. I'm falling in love with you. I need money because I'm sick. Yes. There's millions of those scams. There's sweepstakes scams where you need to send some money so you can get some money. The trick is this. If it sounds too good to be true, it is. You know, don't be a victim. There's also so many on the computer, like clickbait, where it says click here to learn something new. And then they pretend to take over your computer and they want to charge you to get your computer back. Or there's malware they install on your computer. There's one that was just talked about online about title fraud, where someone was buying a condo and their title company sent them a notice by email to pay here, and they did. $200,000 gone. They didn't get the condo and they were out $200,000. So verify everything that comes through your computer.
Jennifer Prell is the president of ElderWorks. That's with three E's, ElderWerks, ElderWorks.org. To sign up for the seminar next Thursday, visit events at ElderWorks.org, I think was the website. Did we say org? Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Jennifer, thanks for your time. Thanks for doing what you're doing.
Thank you. Take care.